Glory to Jesus Christ! Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish presents Light of the East, a program revealing how the Eastern Catholic Churches have nourished the Roman Catholic Churches and today's world in profound ways through their histories, traditions, mysteries, and spirituality. Hello, I am Father Thomas J. Loya, pastor of Annunciation of the Mother of God Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen, Illinois, and this is a story of the Eastern Churches, an inspiring story of faith, courage, intrigue, mystery, spirituality, dissension, and reconciliation. But most of all, this is an expression of a great experience of faith through our unique divine liturgy. Join with me now as we look toward the Light of the East.
Light of the East is also underwritten by a grant from the charitable Koch Foundation, whose vision is to strengthen and propagate the Catholic faith by providing grant support for a wide variety of evangelization efforts. Learn more at KochFoundation.org. Koch spelled K-O-C-H. And Light of the East is also supported by Eastern Christian Publications, where you can find the prayers of the Catholic Byzantine Daily Office at ecpubs.com and easternchristianmedia.com, a broadband network. For you to learn more about the Eastern Catholic Churches, that's easternchristianpublications.com.
Glory to Jesus Christ. Welcome to Light of the East. I am Father Thomas Loya, your host. Maybe some of you have already voted early. Some of you will be voting in November, which is coming up. And one of the issues that is a pivotal issue, at least in the hearts and minds of Catholic voters, is the issue of life, or I should say the issues of life. You know, pro-life is kind of an umbrella term. There's many issues underneath the umbrella of pro-life. In other words, being for the sanctity of life, from womb to tomb, as we like to say, and everything in between. So almost every issue has something to do with life, actually. But Catholics are oftentimes in a dilemma when they vote in America, because we basically have two parties. Now, I know you can vote independent, and I know that there's another party that's trying to start up a third party. But basically, we vote for either Democrat or Republican. And neither one has a complete understanding or a complete package in their platform of what we Catholics would consider to be a sufficient understanding and policy of pro-life issues. So we have to do what Pope Francis said, choose between the lesser evil, so to speak. Although it's not necessarily that black and white. One of the parties is maybe has a lesser understanding than the other. One has a little bit more understanding, but it's not exactly evil per se. They're not trying to be evil. Although there is a lot of reason to be skeptical and to be concerned about the pro-life or lack of pro-life policies in both parties, especially one particular party. I think you know what I mean, because it's a matter of being objective. What is the party platform? What is their history? What are their candidates in favor of? What is their record? What do they articulate about their positions in pro-life? So it is difficult for Catholics. What do we do? One of the things we have to do is understand the pro-life issue in its entirety and where it originates from. And this message is probably meant as much for those who are not Catholics as it is for Catholics. Where we're going to go for this is the liturgy of the church. I'm going to call this liturgy pro-life and womanhood. See, whenever we attend liturgy or the Mass, we call it liturgy in the Eastern churches, any liturgical service of the church that we attend, we are not just attending church or just satisfying an obligation. Yes, we are doing that, but it's really so much more. And what I'm presenting here is the pro-life perspective from the liturgical view of the Eastern churches. In other words, Eastern spirituality, because that's what we're about here, primarily on Light of the East. We're about the gifts of the whole church, both lungs, East and West, but primarily, of course, the Eastern lung of the church. Now, from the art and architecture itself, to the liturgical texts, the chants, the gestures, and movements, liturgy is an encounter with God's blueprint for His entire created order. In other words, for the very meaning of life itself. So when I say liturgy, liturgy is an umbrella term or a broader term. It can mean specifically the divine liturgy, in other words, the Eucharistic liturgy of the Eastern churches, in other words, the Mass, as the West would call it, or it can just mean any kind of public worship that happens together in the church. That's actually what liturgy is. Liturgy means public works or work of the public. So there's kind of a capital L liturgy and there's a small L liturgy. We're basically using it as the small L. It is liturgy, therefore, that provides the context, the model for a true understanding of pro-life issues. Liturgy teaches us to see things sacramentally or mystically. In other words, to see the ultimate why and value behind everything in creation. See, this is a difference between, and also why we Catholics have such consternation of conscience when we go to vote. Because for us, we see the life issues differently than anybody else. We see it in the most complete way. We see it in this, what we're calling here, mystical or sacramental way. In other words, the why behind it. But sometimes even we Catholics have to revisit that why and understand it more deeply, and that's what we're trying to do today. In one way or the other, pro-life issues have a common beginning and foundation in what does or does not go on in the womb of womanhood. See, that's where it all starts. It is therefore the womb of womanhood that must be seen in its liturgical, mystical context. Historically, classic church design in both the Western and Eastern churches had a separation of the sanctuary from the nave. Now, this is preserved in Byzantine churches with the use of an icon screen. It's a large wall, kind of almost like floor-to-ceiling wall, that has three sets of doors on it and is decorated with icons. This goes all the way back to the Old Testament temple. In fact, like the Old Testament temple symbolism, the Christian sanctuary, which the icon screen separates from the nave, became the mystical nuptial chamber in which a mystical marriage between Christ the bridegroom and his bride, the church, would be consummated upon the nuptial bed of the altar in the Eucharist. You have to think very mystically here, very sacramentally. I'm talking about consummating a marriage, but you have to think a mystical marriage between Christ the bridegroom and we now the bride as church. Now, in the Western church, they had, and some Western churches still do have, a separation between the Holy of Holies, in other words, the sanctuary, from the rest of the church, the nave, by means of a communion rail. In the East, as I mentioned, it's an icon screen. I sometimes jokingly say it's like taking a communion rail, adding water to it, and it grows. It grows up into a big wall or screen. We call it an icon screen. It's actually a wall. It's a decorative structure. It's a very beautiful structure, very striking and practical. Like I said, it has three sets of doors on it through which the processions go in and out, but only with the priest, in other words, the ordained ministers and the servers. The people do not go in past the icon screen. The sanctuary is reserved only for the ordained ministers and, of course, their servers by extension. Now, historically, classic church design in both the Western and Eastern churches had a separation of the sanctuary from the nave, as we've said. But now, in Byzantine church design, the tabernacle is always on the altar, and in it is the presence of Christ in the form of consecrated bread. On the back wall of the sanctuary in Byzantine churches, hovering above the tabernacle, is prescribed to be painted the icon of the Theotokos, in other words, the Mother of God, but a particular form of that. This icon that is prescribed, this icon of the Blessed Mother, Theotokos, that is prescribed to be in Byzantine churches on the back wall of the sanctuary, which is oftentimes like a concave wall. So in other words, the back wall of the sanctuary is sort of arching over towards the altar. The icon of the Virgin Mary, the Theotokos that's prescribed here, is called the Platyterra, which means more spacious than the heavens. The Blessed Mother is Christ to us in this icon, as though we're looking into her very interior, as if looking even into her womb. We see Christ there, blessing us. The Virgin Mary, therefore, becomes the mystical tabernacle. The Byzantine liturgy has many beautiful references, actually, to the womb of the Virgin Mary, including mystical paradise. The priest is, so to speak, the steward of the tabernacle, the protector of it. That's why only he approaches the tabernacle. In fact, going back to the Old Testament temple, from which we get all this, only the high priest entered the Holy of Holies, but once a year, for the loftiest of purposes. And that's the same thing now in the Christian classic church. Like the Old Testament high priest, the Byzantine priest or bishop is the only one authorized to approach the tabernacle, but only for the loftiest of reasons. Every woman is configured to the Blessed Virgin Mary, which means by extension, every woman therefore has a sacred space within her own body, just like the Virgin Mary. And we call that, and we can refer to it as a tabernacle of sorts, because heaven and earth meet there, in that part of a woman's body, in the miracle of a new life. If the sanctity of the tabernacle on the altar were to be corrupted by something foreign to its character and purpose, the whole church would become corrupted. So too, if the womb of womanhood is corrupted, seen and approached for other than what it is, the whole moral order of humanity, especially of human sexuality, would become disordered and corrupted. The marital bedroom is the sanctuary of the human race, and woman's womb is its tabernacle. Like the priest of the tabernacle, it is the role of manhood to protect the intrinsic holiness of the body and womb of womanhood. What goes on in the bedroom does not stay there. Rather, it determines the rise and fall of civilization. All the sexual disorders and offenses against the sanctity of life in our times ultimately have the origin in the non-sacramental, non-liturgical view of the womb of womanhood. The restoration of the sanctity of human life in all its forms will not fully happen without a restoration of a liturgical worldview of the human person, which begins with the liturgical view of the womb. From art to architecture to liturgical text and gesture, that restorative view is found and experienced in the liturgical life of the Byzantine Catholic Church. So, you see, from liturgy itself, the church itself, the church becomes the classroom. Liturgy, Mass, becomes the classroom, the blueprint for the whole order of creation, and that order of creation, its sanctity, begins in the woman's womb, and the motto for that is right there, has been since the beginning in classic church art, architecture, and liturgy. I'm Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
Every day, Father Loya posts a brief 2-minute Facebook video on the Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish homepage. You'll be amazed at what you can learn just by watching. Light of the East mission is Christianity's reunion and to tell the story of the Eastern Lung of the Catholic Church. We need your support. In order to keep Light of the East on the air, you can make a donation now by going to ByzantineCatholic.com. That's ByzantineCatholic.com. And then donate securely using any major credit card. With your help, we can keep Light of the East's illumination bright.
Did you know that God constructed women's arms differently than men's? I am Father Thomas Loya with a Theology of the Body moment for the Tabor Life Institute. The axis of a woman's outstretched arms angles inward at the elbow, whereas in men, the axis is straighter. This enables women to bring things to themselves easier than men. Everything about a woman's body, her mind, heart, and soul, is designed for connectedness and to bring the world close to her heart. The language of her body says that God is close, tender, and loving, but she also has what John Paul II called a genius. It is her gift of receptivity stamped in the very design of her body. The Pope said that this makes woman the archetype of the human race because God designed the human race simply to receive his love. To find out more about the theology of the body, visit taborlife.org. Taborlife.org.
I'm Ann Weber from the Catholic Spirit Radio Network, and you're listening to Light of the East.
You are listening to the Choirs of Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church under the direction of Timothy Woods in Homer Glen, Illinois. This is the music you hear on Light of the East and is sung during the sacred liturgy at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish. Order online at ByzantineCatholic.com. All we ask is a donation of $20 or more, which includes shipping and handling, to Annunciation Parish for each Theosis CD. Send a check made out to Annunciation Parish at 14610 Willcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois, 60491. And may God grant you.
Welcome back to Light of the East. I'm Father Thomas Loyal, your host, helping to prepare you for that real conscience consternation that we all have as Catholics when we go to vote. How do we actually vote pro-life? Well, you do the best you can with your conscience, but you have to have, as the Church says, an informed conscience. And that's what we're trying to do here. Our first part of our program today, we looked at the liturgical, mystical context of the very origins, the place where it all begins, and that is the sanctity of woman's womb. And that's the key, is to see things sacramentally or mystically. That's how we understand all of life issues. A lot of people don't understand, even a lot of Catholics don't understand fully all of the teachings of the Church when it comes to life issues. Certain ones in particular seem to be very problematic for Catholics today. Contraception, well, that has been from the beginning, but also things like stem cell research or in vitro fertilization. But all those things can be understood when we put on, I call it putting on our Catholic glasses, where we see not the way the world sees, but as Catholic sees, like you're seeing through the lens of the Eucharist, which is the ultimate mystical mystery. It's something from heaven, what is invisible becomes visible and tangible on earth. So that bread and wine, things of the earth and made from human hands, from God's earth, actually become something of heaven. They make present what is in heaven, physically present, the real presence of God, Jesus Christ. Now, the USCCB puts out a lot of great stuff on these issues, and they also have a pamphlet called Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship. I'm going to read something from there, from paragraph 20. This is what the Church says. The Church's teaching is clear that a good end does not justify an immoral means. As we all seek to advance the common good by defending the inviolable sanctity of human life from the moment of conception until natural death, by promoting religious freedom, by defending marriage, by feeding the hungry and housing the homeless, by welcoming the immigrant and protecting an environment, it is important to recognize that not all possible courses of action are morally acceptable. We have a responsibility to discern carefully which public policies are morally sound. Catholics may choose different ways to respond to compelling social problems, but we cannot differ on our moral obligation to help build a more just end and peaceful world through morally acceptable means, so that the weak and vulnerable are protected and human rights and dignity are defended. Again, that's from the Forming Consciences of Faithful Citizenship, a pamphlet put out by USCCB. Now, the issues that are non-negotiable for Catholics are these. Respecting human life. Okay, evil acts by which human life is violated or disrespected are listed below in order of importance and based on current issues in the United States. And this is the list that they give in order of their importance. Number one, abortion and euthanasia. You notice they're on two opposite ends of the spectrum, but they're tied by the one same mystical view of life, the sanctity of life from womb to tomb. These actions directly take the life of an innocent human being and therefore are the most grave evils. Now, even here, there are pro-life people, even Catholics, who don't fully understand this. We have a lot of pro-life legislation that could have won in various states, but it lost because, well, I have to say it, they lost largely because of pro-life voters. In other words, people who are ordinarily pro-life, but, big but they kind of still wanted that little escape hatch, that little safe door. It's because they were basically influenced or brainwashed by what is the anti-life position that oftentimes can use words in a way that really pulls at the heartstrings. For example, those who champion abortion will say, well, maybe we're not pushing abortion per se. However, in the case of a woman's life, if it's in danger, you have to have the option for her to have an abortion to save her life. We wouldn't want the mother to die. And what about if a young lady is pregnant from incest or rape? Why should she be punished to carry that child to term when she had nothing to do with it? It wasn't her choice. It was rape and incest. This is awful. How can we be so insensitive? You notice as I'm saying that, and they say it much better than I do, it kind of pulls at the heartstrings. You start thinking, oh, yeah, that's right. We can't do that to that young girl. We can't let a mother die because of that one baby that's maybe causing her life to be threatened. She's got other children. You see, it sounds kind of convincing, doesn't it? It's very alluring. And so people who are otherwise pro-life hedged on that. And so a lot of pro-life legislation did not go through in the end. But you see, that keeps a crack in the door that opens the door for a lot of things that are against life. And once you open that door, it only opens wider. So bottom line is this, there is no exception for abortion. No, not even the case of the life of the mother, because the approach to saving a mother's life is not actively killing a child. In other words, you don't abort, you don't kill the child to save the mother. You do everything you can to save both. Now, it may be inevitable that the child may die in the process, but you don't actively kill it. That's the difference. And it's a big difference. It may seem like a nuanced difference, but it is not. It is a huge difference of intentionality, of principle. So there is no case to be made for abortion. It is intrinsically evil. It is not necessary. And I know that's a tough one, even among pro-life people. Now, the second thing is, in importance of non-negotiables for Catholics on pro-life, is embryonic stem cell research and human cloning. These actions manipulate human life and directly interfere with God's plan for human beings. Now, here again, we point to that sacramental worldview that in the Eastern churches we're so strong on. It's so much a part of our spirituality. We see everything mystically, everything sacramentally. If we see the human person, human life, sacramentally, we see it as sacred all the time. So there's things we can't do with it. Even if we can do it, if we physically can do it, doesn't mean we should do it. That's another problem we have today. We look at all change as progress. We call it progress. But that's not true. Yes, there is always change with progress, but change itself does not mean there is real progress. In fact, it can be regression on another level. I know it's kind of a brain teaser, but it works like this. Just because we can do something that we couldn't do before, technically, scientifically, doesn't mean that we should do it. And we think that, whoa, any kind of new thing we can do now that we couldn't before is something we should do. It's progress. Well, it's progress in a technical way, but it's regression in a moral way. And that's the case with things like embryonic stem cell research and human cloning. The church, of course, does allow and blesses stem cell research that comes from adults, not from embryos. Now, the third one is same-sex marriage. This violates God's original plan for man and woman, beginning with the creation of Adam and Eve, and his plan for the structure of the family upon which society is built. As St. John Paul II said, civilization goes by way of the family, and family goes by way of marriage. Same-sex marriage, and again, that's another tempting one, especially if we have children or adult children in our family that are so-called married to another person. I know it makes it more difficult. What do we do? What does the parent do? How do they relate to this? But you see, the word itself, same-sex marriage, is self-contradictory because the word sex means two complementary genders. If you don't have complementary genders, you don't have sex. Simple as that. So you can have marriage, because marriage itself, that word, means two complementary things that are made to fit together, and when they do, something good happens, such as a union and also a procreation. At least the procreation is possible. It may not happen every time, but it is possible. So the unitive and the procreative dimensions come together only when you have a complementary relationship of male female. You know, I always laugh at how the world is trying to snuff out complementarity, male and female. Yet when you get a piece of furniture or something from the store and you have to put it together, they often refer to the male part and the female parts of the furniture or the mechanical object. They still refer to that when it comes to those things, but they can't refer to it, no, we're not allowed to refer to it when it comes to man and woman. It's such an irony in our culture. There's much more to this. We'll take it up again, but please refer to the Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship to help your conscience, your discernment, when you go to vote. I'm Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
To hear Light of the East again, visit ByzantineCatholic.com and click on the Features and Programs tab and on iTunes. Thank you for listening to Light of the East. We encourage you to tell a friend about Light of the East and to visit ByzantineCatholic.com. Light of the East is produced by ADC Media.
News from around the world as it happens. Religious liberty, immigration, prayer, plus daily reports from the White House, Capitol Hill, and Rome. Get the Catholic news perspective on the things that impact your life on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Thank you for listening. Next week, we will return to the Light of the East. To learn more about Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish, visit our website, ByzantineCatholic.com, where you will also find an archive of all of our programs. In order to continue Light of the East with its mission of Christianity's reunion, we need your support with a donation. Any amount will be a blessing. Please make out a check to Light of the East Radio and send it to Light of the East, 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois, 60491. That's Light of the East, 14610 Wilcook Road, spelled WILL-COOK Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. Or donate online on the homepage of ByzantineCatholic.com. From the Light of the East, a new dawn of unity is in sight. God bless you, go with God, and may God grant you many happy years.